Hello and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors and artists about baseball books, music, film, pretty much anything you can fit on a bookshelf. And that's the slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. Forgive me if I can't cite a specific source, but I'm guessing more books have been written about Babe Ruth than any other athlete. Ruth made his major league debut 100 years ago as a phenom for the Boston Red Sox, so there's been a lot of time to digest what he's meant to the national pastime, especially in the aftermath of the Black Sox scandal, when he was given almost total credit for saving the game. Remember, Ruth played at a time when there was no television, and even radio was in its early years of sports coverage. So the responsibility fell to the writers, hence so many articles and books, even now. In Babe Ruth's called shot, The Myth and Mystery of Baseball's Greatest Home Run, Ed Sherman, a longtime sports writer for the Chicago Tribune and the host of ShermanReport.com, a national website on sports media, focuses on perhaps the one defining moment in a superlative career. Through interviews with people who were actually at the event, newspaper reports of the day and afterwards, quoting Ruth, his Yankee teammates and Chicago Cubs opponents, members of Ruth's families, and even the current owner of the film which purports to be the final answer, Sherman attempts to determine once and for all about Ruth's signature moment. Did he or didn't he?
Ed Sherman, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
I'm going to start off with a bit of controversy right away. Another book about Babe Ruth, another story about his called shot. What gave you the idea that this was necessary?
Well, I think that there have been a lot of stories about Babe Ruth, obviously two great biographies by Robert Kremer and Lee Monfield, in which the called shot was discussed as chapters in those books. But, I kind of got intrigued by the whole notion of the called shot and how it came about. And really, it kind of got started for me when I was able to get an interview with Justice John Paul Stevens, Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, who was at the game. He was 12 years old, and he gave me an interview in his chambers in 2008. And it was really, quite a thrill to be in a Supreme Court Justice's chambers, and he had a painting of the called shot hanging in his office with a scorecard. And it got me to thinking, how did this come about? It's one of the great legends of all time. And I'm obviously a journalist, a media guy. I knew there was a big media component in it. And the more I kind of thought about it, the more I thought about all the different angles, I thought it would be great to kind of examine, what happened leading up to it, because there was quite a backstory leading up to it. And then kind of examining what happened afterwards and why this, did it happen? And regardless of whether or not you thought it happened, it's definitely existed. We're still talking about it 81 years later, and we'll probably still be talking about it 81 years from now.
Well, it's like that line from The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
That's
the facts,
right.
Become more interesting than the truth.
Right.
Than
I mean, there were so many different... And there were so many different angles to the story leading up to it, just how it all came together. He almost didn't even play in that World Series. He was out, in September with whatever, some kind of, they thought of appendicitis, but it was some kind of mysterious ailment. And the other thing that I think that is important to note about the called shot is that without the called shot, Babe Ruth really didn't have that seminal moment in his career, that one moment where everyone can kind of point to as where he went above and beyond, like the Willie Mays catch or even Hank Aaron breaking Babe Ruth's records, the great moment in his career. So this, I think the called shot was needed to kind of give him that moment, that capstone to the career where you can kind of think, what's the one thing you remember most about Babe Ruth, the greatest player arguably of all time? You go to the called shot. So I think that's another important factor in this story.
It's interesting when you say that, because here's a man who saved baseball from the Black Sox scandal, who brought it into the modern era, so to speak, who had 714 home runs, and you say there was no seminal moment in his career.
Well, when you think about it, And when you think about it, you know, he hit his 60 home runs, but when he hit 60 home runs, he only broke, it was breaking a record by one that he'd set only a few years earlier. It wasn't like that record had lasted, you know, 40 or 50 years. He didn't hit a home run in Game 7 of a World Series to win a title. You know, when you just go ahead and try and think of the great moments in his career, the one that really stands out more than anything else was the called shot, and it was his last great, really great moment on baseball stage. He did hit the first All-Star Game home run, but even then, you know, that's not nearly remembered as much as this called shot, which was the last World Series home run he hit, the last World Series that he won. So, I mean, it was kind of like this grand finale of his career, and it's really kind of, you know, kind of symbolized what he's all about. And you think about, I even did a chapter at the end, think about all the times in pop culture where there have been references to, you know, where someone points in a movie or in a commercial, and instantly you don't have to say what are they doing, you know it's Babe Ruth and the called shot. You know, so I think that there's a lot of, as again, there's just so many different tentacles to this story, and it goes in so many different directions, and that's what, to me, made it so fascinating to write about.
So were you actually looking for a definitive answer, or just...
Well, I was kind of, both. I don't think that there, you know, when you, let's go, I was kind of trying to do the whole context of the whole story. To me, a big part of the media chapter, I did a big, you know, examining what the writers wrote and how some writers didn't write anything, didn't even make any reference to the called shot. And there was also this myth that, you know, that nobody, you know, maybe one or two, you know, one or two guys only made reference, and that wasn't true either, because there were some references the next day beyond what was reported in the famous New York headline that used the example called shot. So there was a definite media component. For instance, Grantland Rice, the sports writer of that generation and any generation, did not write about the called shot the next day, but instead did it the day after. And in great, you know, in great dramatic flourish, like he always used to write. And why was that the case? Why did he wait? You know, there was some speculation that sometimes, you know, back then it wasn't like the conventional rules apply today. They would save their best stuff for another day. Or, you know, did he kind of get wind of, you know, some references to the called shot, and he's, you know, tried to play catch-up the following day? I mean, so it's a really interesting, a lot of different interesting angles. And then you got the angles of Babe Ruth. You know, we didn't have, nobody really went down to the locker room after the game, so you weren't able to, you didn't ask, he wasn't asked about, did you point, what were you doing there? And initially, a lot of his comments kind of, you know, dismiss the fact that he called his shot, you know, that he, you know, I'd be crazy, you know, they'd have to, I think there was a famous quote, they'd have to put me in the booby hatch, you know, which is the way, a great quote, you know, you wouldn't really necessarily hear today. And then, but as the story grew, it appears that he kind of, you know, he said, okay, if they want to believe it, I'm going to run with it. And he definitely did run with it. And, you know, for years, until the rest of his life, he maintained that he called the shot. And if someone asked him about it, he would, you know, tell it in great detail.
Now, modern media consumers today don't realize, I think, that in those days, newspapers were pretty much it. You know, there was radio, but that was just in the very beginnings. There was no television, obviously. The film, the famous baseball's Zapruder film version, is not definitive in any way, shape, or form. You have the media people with their different versions. I imagine where you sat in the ballpark could have played into how you perceived any kind of motion Ruth might have made.
Right. And you mentioned the video, and I thought that was, if there was one element that I found that was really interesting in the book, that was kind of that I didn't expect. I did go to Louisville to visit with the great grandson who shot the video, a guy named Kirk Candle, Matt Candle shot the video, and his great-grandson who owns the video, Kirk, and we watched it, and it was more than what you've seen in previous versions, what you've seen in, you know, elsewhere. I mean, it's about a minute and a half worth of footage. Fascinating, but the thing that I didn't realize was that the big grand gesture that everyone sees, you know, where it looks like he's either pointing or you know, or more accurately maybe waving the Cubs players back in the dugout, that happens after a ball, a 2-1 pitch. So that wasn't like the pitch that was right before the call where he hit the home run. And then, you know, and you know, there's this idea that Gabby Hartnett didn't see, you know, well, I didn't see him pointing. Well, in that pitch, the pitch kind of gets away from him, and his back is turned to Ruth because he's retrieving the ball. So that was kind of interesting to see. Then Ruth takes the next pitch for a strike, and he's not like, you know, with the bat on his shoulder, you know, just taking it, you know, the pitch to give him two strikes. I mean, he definitely kind of, like, you know, took a step forward, strided, and then decided not to swing for whatever reason. So, and then right after that, you know, right after that pitch, again, he's kind of making these gestures where he's cocking his arms. He's not the arm isn't ramrod straight, you know, like in the movies, but he's definitely cocking his arm. And he's definitely pointing. It's a little bit obscured because Hartnett's arm is kind of he's throwing the ball back to the pitcher, but he's definitely making a gesture again. So there's not one gesture, but there's a series of gestures. And then on the next pitch, you know, Ruth, it's just amazing. You know, it's just amazing to see him in that context of a game to actually connect and hit that home run, you know, which was a low and away pitch that no one, he should have never even swung at. I mean, it was, you know, basically, he basically golfed it out of there. So again, there's a lot of elements to this story that probably haven't been told before or haven't been examined because you've kind of only kind of got the piecemeal aspect of it in various documentaries and in books.
Now, you collected a lot of reminiscences from a lot of people, people who were there, people in the Cubs, people in the Yankees. Some say yes, some say no. You talk to his daughter and his granddaughter, and I'm sure his daughter and granddaughter are proponents of, I mean, I hate to call it the myth, but for lack of a better word, let's go with that.
Oh, for sure. You know, and it was one of the great highlights of the book is that, you know, this year will mark the 100th anniversary where Ruth played his first professional game. And on that 100th anniversary, you're still able to talk to his daughter, his adopted daughter, Julia, still alive, 96 years old, very sharp. I mean, I did a phone interview with her, and that was a great thrill. She wasn't at the game, but obviously she had heard all the stories of the called shot, and she believed it. His granddaughter also is a definite believer, and she thought that Ruth, and there was some truth that Ruth was kind of, you know, for all his showmanship, he wasn't the kind of guy to necessarily try to show up other people. And she thought she kind of, you know, he said his initial comments about him not, you know, wanting to not acknowledging that he did it were kind of a matter of not wanting to show up the Cubs. That's kind of debatable, but that's what she said. So they were definite believers. And but on the other side, there's, you know, Charlie Root, the pitcher who won 201 games for the Cubs, a very good pitcher, the most wins in Cubs history, and yet he and his family lamented the fact, you know, continued to lament the fact that this guy was a great pitcher, and he's just, and yet all he's remembered for is that one pitch that he threw to Ruth, and they contend that, again, it didn't happen, that he didn't point. And so you get kind of both sides of the story, and you kind of have that played out. So again, it's just kind of interesting to kind of hear this, again, many, many different angles.
Now, you mentioned the movies before. There are, as far as I know, three biopics about Ruth. One was a Babe Ruth story with William Bendix. Another one was with John Goodman. And another one was, I forget the actor's first name, Lang was his second name.
There was a made-for-TV movie. In the two big Hollywood productions with John Goodman and William Bendix, they were just absurd. I mean, you can see the first one is just, I mean, I think everyone knows how, what a joke that movie was and how it goes down as one of not only the worst sports movies, but one of the worst movies, period, of all time. And, you know, obviously they, Ruth, you know, they tied the whole Ruth called shot to the Little Johnny, hit one for Little Johnny story, which, you know, I mean, they just try to, you know, wrap all the myths into one tidy package. But the John Goodman movie, the one that was done in the 90s, was particularly disappointing because by then, we're a much more sophisticated audience, and people, I think, we're much more conditioned to kind of, I would expect that the myth would have been, the story would have been told with a little more nuance instead of the whole, would it be a little bit open to interpretation. But again, John Goodman's arm, I think, was, pointed for a good 5 counts, I think I had, which is ridiculous because it wasn't like that. And then he hits the home run. It's the home run to win the game, which wasn't the home run to win the game because it was in the 5th inning, And then the movie even gets more absurd. I mean, I think they tried to outdo the Bendix movie because then at the end of the movie, they have him hitting those final 3 home runs in Pittsburgh, but he's so worn out that they give him a designated runner. I mean, where in baseball history did you see a designated runner? If you remember that, the first 2 home runs, he goes to first base and then taps this kid on the shoulder who runs around the rest of the bases for him. I mean, designated runner? Come on.
I guess they didn't use fact checkers for the movie.
Yeah, right. And it wasn't like that Ruth was 80 years old. He was 40. He was breaking down. But he was, Ruth was a pretty good athlete. I mean, he was pitching into – he pitched. People don't realize. I think it was either 30 or 31. He went 10 years – without pitching. He pitched a game in one of those late, meaningless September games. He pitched like a complete game victory. I think he pitched another one in 1933. So it wasn't like he was this old, broken-down guy who couldn't get around the bases anymore. His skills had kind of waned.
So this looks like it was a fun book to do.
It was really enjoyable. And I think my big takeaway from the book is whether or not you agree or disagree, whether or not you thought he called his shot or didn't think he called a shot, to completely dismiss, if you didn't think he called the shot, to completely dismiss this moment as just a regular at-bat where the pitcher looked in for his signs and the batter was waiting, that's not true at all. This was the most unique at-bat in baseball history. Regardless of whether or not it played out to where he called his shot, this was a situation in a World Series game. The Cubs had just kind of – Yankees were up 2-0. They took a big lead, and thanks to a 3-run home run by Babe Ruth in the first inning in this game. And they took a big lead, and the Cubs had just come back to tie the game at 4-4. The momentum has shifted. The Cubs crowd is just going crazy because of all this bad blood between the Cubs and the Yankees and Ruth. And he comes up in the 5th inning, and the Cubs players are out on the dugout. I mean, they're on the field. I mean, can you imagine that happening today? And they're taunting and they're yelling at this guy, and the crowd is going crazy in the middle of this game. And, and he's pointing back, and he's taunting, and he's yelling. And then maybe he pointed, maybe he didn't. He's definitely threatening to do something bad to the Cubs. And then in this big dramatic moment, he hits the longest home run in perhaps, at that time, Wrigley Field history, and one of the longest ever, that effectively ends the World Series, for that. The Cubs are dead. They don't even – they lose that game and then lose game 4. So it was – you name me another moment like this in baseball history. You can't. It was the most unique moment at bat ever, and it's one that they'll be talking about forever.
And we are talking with Ed Sherman, author of Babe Ruth's Cold Shot, The Myth and Mystery of Baseball's Greatest Home Run, published by Lions Press. Ed, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
And once again, that was Ed Sherman, author of Babe Ruth's Cold Shot, The Myth and Mystery of Baseball's Greatest Home Run. I'm sure he'll be making many author appearances at various locations around the country, but I just want to let you know he'll be at the Bergino Baseball Clubhouse in Manhattan on Thursday, May 7th. So that wraps up another episode of the Baseball Bookshelf Podcast Edition. Please check the blog, Ron Kaplan's BaseballBookshelf.com, on a regular basis to find out about all the new books that are coming out this year and to see who might be the next guest on a podcast edition of the Baseball Bookshelf. Thanks, everybody. So long for now. If old man Columbus had sat in the stand, had seen Matty pitching that fader so grand, he'd have said, boys, I'm glad I discovered this land. Gee, it's a wonderful game.